Welcome to the MC Universe. We're the Lorehounds, your guides to the multiverse and beyond. I'm David.
And I'm Jean. And in this episode, we are going to discuss the trailers for the upcoming Secret Invasion TV show and the Marvel movie. After that, we will delve deep into the details to prep you for the upcoming Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
And we've got a special guest joining us later in the podcast. Alicia from Amsterdam is going to be jumping on with a special segment about who might not be making it out alive from the Guardians movie. A quick reminder that the MC Universe is an occasional podcast, and we're going to be producing episodes on an as-needed basis, so stay tuned to the end of the podcast for programming notes about future MC episodes and other things that we're up to at the Lorehounds.
If you have questions, comments, fan theories, industry news, or anything you want to share with us, drop us a note. Send us feedback to mcu@thelorehounds.com or head over to our website at thelorehounds.com and use the contact form or record a voicemail, and we will get to those on the next podcast.
And we'd like to invite you to join our Patreon, if that works for you. Joining our Patreon is the best way to support us, and for as little as $3 a month, you get ad-free episodes of all of our podcasts, as well as early access and more. But always, our ad-supported podcasts are available on all major platforms. Just search for the Lorehounds to find us and subscribe.
Lastly, if you can take a moment, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We'd really appreciate it. Ratings help other people find the podcast, and reviews let people know about the content.
Okay, Jean, with all of that out of the way, I think we've got a lot of stuff to talk about before we bring Alicia in. You've got a little bit of an outline for us. You've been tracking all the news. What is going on in the MCU?
So the first thing is, let's just talk about the Secret Invasion TV show.
Okay.
The trailer that dropped a couple of weeks ago. And to say that I'm excited for this show, to say that we all should be excited for this show, is an understatement. It looks like it can be something spectacular. Yeah, so have you seen the trailer?
Yeah, I did. I there was a teaser, and then I think a trailer. I got a lot of feels from it. It seems like a great Samuel L. Jackson, you know, man on fire kind of thing. Like, he's our chief protagonist. And I don't want to do a one-to-one comparison, but I guess what I'll couch this in hopeful terms, not as in a one-to-one terms, but as Andor is to Star Wars, I'm hoping Secret Invasion is to the MCU. I want that dark, gritty spy thriller stuff. I want the underbelly of all of the big heroic things that are going on and the battles of good and evil. There's stuff underneath that has to happen for, you know, revolutions to succeed and, you know, superheroes to prevail. And I am so hopeful that this is going to be good. And I really, really don't want to be disappointed. So I'm trying to balance my expectations. But yeah, I'm hype.
That's great, because that's exactly what I expect from this TV show. Take Nick Fury back to his roots. He's a spy.
Yeah,
you know, that's where he started. That's what he is. He's a clandestine agent. You know, breaking things in the dark, and you not being able to see him coming, hiding his hand. Right. This is the Nick Fury that I've wanted to see in the MCU. Don't get me wrong. I've appreciated Nick Fury in the Avengers movies, of course. I thought he was great. Captain Marvel. All of that stuff. But I wanted to see him get to this dark CIA-esque type of situation where he's, you know, infiltrating the infiltrators. And this is exactly what this TV show is about.
Right.
You know, he's on the case. And I think that's a really different premise from what we've seen, because it's much more, even though we're dealing with aliens who can shapeshift.
Yeah.
It seems to be like this is a much more grounded, earth-shattering in that way type of story.
Right.
This is not a spacefaring story. This is not about, you know, Hulk smash. This is really a grounded attempt to tell a story within the MCU by characters who are, by their very nature, this is what they do.
Right.
And I'm really excited for it. The one thing that I'll say is that prior to, the end of last week, I thought I knew possibly where the TV show was going to take us because of the previous, because of the previous Secret Invasion storyline that Marvel
from
ran
the comic books. You mean
a decade from the comic books?
Okay. Excuse me. And what era was that original storyline from? Was that 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s?
The aughts.
Sorry?
The early 2000s.
Early 2000s, got it.
This century. This is not a 1960 story.
This is what are you calling me, old man? You're just as old as me, my man.
This century. We're talking about this century. 21st century storytelling.
Nice.
So I kind of felt like I would know where the story is going. But then Marvel Comics did something unexpected. They just finished another Secret Invasion storyline. It was a 5-episode comic.
It
just ended. And this kind of threw me off. Because this comic run that they just did, this storyline they just told, they told it in a much more grounded way. We didn't have the alien shapeshifters taking over all the superheroes as in the first Secret Invasion. This was a attempt to take over the world in a much more clandestine, spy-guided way. We're going to take over. We're going to replace certain people in certain places, in certain industries, in certain capacities, in order to become the rulers of this planet. That gives me the feel of what I've seen in the trailers.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that seems your theory of the case here is that they're seeding the comic book readers with the main structure of the plot for the television show.
I think Marvel has thrown a monkey wrench in the plans of so many people because there are a lot of folks, myself included, who wanted to see superheroes be replaced, right? Because that's the original story. This new story, I just don't know. And that's a great thing because I don't know where the story on the TV show is going to take me. Like, I'm going in there confident that I don't know. And that's really an amazing place to be since I've read the comics like 10 times already. You know, so it's an interesting thing that they're trying to do. Getting away from the big, big set pieces that we've all come to know and love. And to really tell a spy drama. And like you said, maybe it could be the Andor to this MCU.
So I've got so many thoughts. I mean, one thing that I want to do is make sure that we break down the storyline a little bit. We got to talk about Flurgans. We got to talk about Skrulls. We got to talk about what we know so far and, sort of prep people for what to expect here. Then there's some story element stuff that I want to talk about. But before we do that, just sort of on an MCU scale of things, there seems to be, I don't wonder, this is, I'm theorizing here. I'm putting my tinfoil hat on a little bit here.
if
they're trying to adjust themselves in some way, the MCU, Disney, the MCU production house, the big machine that produces all of these things. I wonder how much they're aware of the MCU fatigue that is out there, and I wonder how much that this pivot in a smaller, more intimate story, something that has got a higher drama quotient to it, isn't a way to temper some of those reactions that the fandom has been going through. Because we got a big push of a bunch of stuff just last year in phase four that a lot of people were just like, meh, either meh or like, I can't watch. Like, you guys are throwing too much at me. I can't even keep up. And do I have to watch this to watch that? And I've got something else going on. So I don't know. That's I'm theorizing that. What's your sensibility about that?
I think that there might be some truth to that, but I also know that after Secret Invasion, or even before Secret Invasion, because Secret Invasion comes out in June.
Yeah,
we're getting Guardians of the Galaxy, right?
Right.
Which is not Secret Invasion storytelling. You know what I mean? After Secret Invasion, we're getting Marvels, which is not a Secret Invasion type of storytelling.
Right.
Those are the grand cosmic Avengers. So we're still getting those stories.
Right.
But to your point, I think they are trying to give something else. Right. Okay. Not just the big superhero kapow, kaboom type of situation, but something a little bit more slow, something a little bit more slow burning, something a little bit more in depth of storytelling.
Okay.
And yeah, that could be as a part of what people have said is Marvel fatigue.
Right. But
I don't take it so far, because within this year, we are still getting a lot of the big set pieces that we've grown accustomed to.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. You know, in this world of big IP, you know, with Star Wars has really got, they're cooking with gas now. We've got, a new lineup on the movies. DC's trying to find its footing and swing some more. There's rumors of Harry Potter in HBO. We certainly have House of the Dragon and all this kind of stuff. It's a lot. And it's even hard for, I don't want to call this professional, but people who are regularly podcasting or following the media. My head is spinning. I have to have a whole Gantt chart, database thing to keep track of all this stuff. And I would be happy for them to slow down a little bit. Couple of movies, couple of TV shows, and then call it good for the year. But like these 3-4 TV shows, 3-4 movies in a calendar year, that's just way too much,
I think
it's hard on everybody. I think it's hard on the actors. I think it's hard on the production crews. I think it's hard on the CGI houses, especially when you've got a very crowded marketplace where everybody's trying to follow what Feige and the MCU really reinvented for the modern streaming age. Big IP stuff is that's not a new invention necessarily. Serialized production, not necessarily new, but in the new streaming age and crossing over between big and small screens and bringing in all your other material, comic books, books, etc. Everybody's chasing Marvel. And if Marvel's just trying to continue at full speed, it feels like, the speed, you get the speed wobbles, when you're riding your skateboard and it starts getting you downhill and you start like losing control. So I want them to slow down a little bit. And I hope that Secret Invasion gives us a little bit of that more intimate scale and a little bit of a different pacing.
Well, I think that's already happened in the way that you've seen that they've pulled back from what they had announced that was going to premiere in 2023.
Uh-huh.
Right. So a lot of the shows, a lot of the movies that people were expecting a year and a half ago are not coming to fruition this year.
Right.
So I think they've already slowed down the pacing.
That's good.
About how many shows, how many visuals that we get to see. So in that regard, I think you're spot on.
So let's talk a little bit about the theme of Secret Invasion, I guess, both from the comic books and in the MCU televised movie, world that we've got here. We'll get into Skrulls in a little bit, but the idea that there's a shapeshifters and they have the ability to infiltrate any other race that they want to some degree, and that the Earth is vulnerable to that. And I believe in the trailers and the teasers, they even explicitly say some of this, who can you trust? And I think that's a new, at least for the screen stuff, that's a new theme. That's a new thematic element that we're getting in the MCU. We did have some questions around the whole Winter Soldier and Civil War, where it was, what side are you on when it comes to how is power managed and who has the right to use power and what happens if power goes wrong. You use power and it goes wrong and there's consequences. So we've had that kind of conversation. Correct me if I'm wrong, but at least on the screen MCU stuff, this feels like the first time where it's like, oh, I don't know who Jean is. I don't know who John is. I don't know who Elisa is. Can I trust them? Are they really somebody on my side? That's scary stuff, like in a, you know, that's a potentially very scary element, and it's very dark. And you're questioning people's motives and trying to set people up in traps to, like, you know, get them to reveal themselves or try to suss out, you know, you think somebody, you know, that you trust and you've been telling all your secrets, and suddenly, nope, that's not the case. Sorry. Now you're in the hot water. So this feels new, something new for the MCU.
Well, it is. We were introduced to the Skrulls and the concept of shape-shifting and not knowing who's who in Captain Marvel.
Right. So was that their first screen appearance, was Captain Marvel?
That was their first screen appearance.
Got it.
So we got the background of what's going on with those, with that particular group of citizens of the MCU, right? So yes, who can you trust when maybe not everybody who can shapeshift is a friend, right? Because at the end of the Captain Marvel movie, everybody that we saw who was a Skrull was an ally.
Right.
So what happened between the end of that movie and Secret Invasion? Well, what happened, you got the Avengers, we got Thanos, we got the Snap, we got the Fall of Asgard, we've had the Eternals, the Celestials, you know, revealing themselves. We've had all these major moments in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
The Skrulls have been waiting since the end of Captain Marvel to all of, they've witnessed all of these things, right?
Okay.
For their own home world. That is what Nick Fury promised.
Right. So I guess let's overlap a little bit here with this thematic element into actually what's happening with the Skrulls and what's going on in this world. Because I think we can't really talk about the thematic stuff unless we start dealing with some of the in-world constructions that we have here. So yeah, the Skrulls, we met them at the end of Marvel, Captain Marvel. They're persecuted people. I believe, remind me the other...
They basically lost the war against them.
The Kree, that's right. Kree, that's who it was.
The Kree and the Skrull in Marvel Comics are lifelong enemies.
Okay.
Their war has lasted generations. Billions of souls have been lost to this cause, to this war. And in the MCU, we get definitively that it seems as if the Kree had won the war. Because the Skrulls that we meet are allegedly the last remnants of their society.
Right. And the one big Kree that we really, what was his name, the big blue guy?
Ronan the Accuser.
The Accuser, yeah. And Ronan the Accuser, that's right.
So the Accusers for the Kree are like sanctioned superheroes for what we would consider in our Earth 616.
Okay.
Like when Iron Man became a proxy of the government in Civil War and did the bidding of the government, that's what the Kree represent. They're the Accusers represent.
Right.
That's what the Accusers represent, excuse me. They're the enforcer.
Lee Pace just killed it with that role as Ronan. He was so good in that.
Yeah, he was great.
It was just awesome.
He was great.
One of my favorites. One of my favorite parts about the first Guardians of the Galaxy was him.
Yeah, he was really good. He was really good.
Okay, so we've got the Kree and the Skrull. Generations-long war, millions dead. In Captain Marvel, we realize that they've been around with us, and Fury has some sympathy for them and respect for them.
Yes.
And then he obligates, under what authority does he obligate making any kind of promises to the Skrulls?
He's Nick Fury.
Boom, there it is right there. He's just Nick Fury. MF Nick Fury. Nick Fury.
That's it. That's it.
I love it.
All right, so him and Captain Marvel, the reason that we don't see Captain Marvel for so long.
She's off somewhere else, right?
Storytelling. Yeah. She's off in the universe trying to find a suitable homeworld for the Skrulls. Whatever adventures she's having while she's off screen, when we don't see her for those 20 years or so, 30 years from when
the movie came out. That's a long time to search for a planet.
It's a long time. We don't know what other shenanigans she got into.
Sure.
You know, what other adventures she got into. But primarily, she was trying to find him a homeworld in conjunction with Nick Fury.
Got it.
That hasn't happened.
Uh-huh. And so the Skrulls aren't happy about it.
I'm sure not everybody in Skrull world is happy about not having a home where they can just be themselves. They don't have to appear as other people, as other beings.
Earth is a pretty good place by their estimation. Like, it's got habitable surface and atmosphere and, resources.
It could be, if you don't have to hide your true self.
Right. So then that gets into some really interesting territory there in some of what we're dealing with in our modern day real world, in the primary world.
Of course.
About who you are and being able to live as who you are. In all aspects of that, in psychologically and physiologically,
Could you imagine? You know, you and I can't even imagine what that would be.
No,
to look in the mirror and not see ourselves,
right?
To see something that you have to put on in order to fit into the society that you're walking outside the
door. Right, and there are people today in our daily life that. Well, they can't change they cannot do an octopus style change to their skin and texture and all of that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
In terms of their identity of who they are to the world, people do have to put on those costumes and those masks, and that's a heavy psychological burden. And we know the kinds of effects that it has on people to live that way for so long. It can be devastating.
It can be devastating. So I'm sure there are many Skrull who are on the Earth who do not appreciate having to look like a human being whenever they step outside their
door. Right. Right.
What does that do to a generation who grew up that way?
Right.
Right? Because we're talking 30 years, right? So I'm sure they've had children in that time, right? What happened to the promises that you told us that, you know, hey, Dad, you promised me this was going to change. What's going on with that?
Right.
Where's the change coming?
Interesting, too. The last time we were on the MCU podcast, our last episode, one of the things that we talked a lot about was the generational shift that's happening.
Yes.
The Avengers and the that first guard of superhero have either retired, gotten too old, their knees have given out, we've lost them. We've lost them in the battles, or we've lost them in the conflicts. You know,
they're dead.
They're dead. And now we're moving on to this next generation. And so first generation Skrulls, so to speak. And then, as you say, like, hey, Dad, Mom and Dad, y'all promised us something and we're not seeing that. We're now adults and we're now coming out into the world as being with agency and identity and with means and things that we want to see happen for our children yet to come. What's going on? We're gonna start taking matters into our own hands, and that's always a intergenerational thing that happens.
Always,
right? So
always. So I think that's the crux of what's going on in this TV show.
Okay,
you're gonna have, you know, folks who are asking the question, like, what happened?
Right.
Like, Captain Marvel, what happened? Fury? Why are we still here like this? What's going on?
And so that puts Fury in a difficult position, too, because he was their ally and he made promises. And now there are people who have decided to act in their own self-interest, regardless of what Fury promised. And so now that's a difficult bind, right?
I don't think it's regardless of what he promised. It's it's because his promise hasn't amounted to anything.
Empty words.
Yeah.
And at what point do you just
tell
say,
me
okay,
you're trying?
I hear what you're saying, but I'm not seeing what you're doing. What you're doing is more important than what you're saying, and I don't see any doing happening here. And at what point do I start to take things into my own hands and shape my own future instead of just sitting around waiting for you to deliver on your promise?
Absolutely.
And then that puts Nick in a really difficult position because he's got to defend the integrity of his race and his government and his planet at the same time of how do I be a man of honor and ultimately, live up to my promises and live up to my word.
Well, is Nick Fury a man of honor?
Good. There you go. That's a really good question.
That's the question. We don't get me wrong. I love Nick Fury.
Yeah.
But Nick Fury is a spy, man.
Right.
He's a deceiver.
Right.
He'll tell you one truth while hiding two untruths behind his hand.
Well, and then we saw that in the Avengers movies, right? When Tony is like, when they're on the bridge of the ship and he's working with Bruce Banner and he's like, what else, or he's talking to the rest of the team, what else is Fury not telling us? How much more is underneath the surface here? I don't trust him. I don't trust his motivations. And I want to get to the bottom of that. And then that's obviously where we get into the whole Tesseract,
Exactly. So, like I said, we love Nick Fury. But Fury is, do you put your trust completely in Nick Fury? And your question was earlier, who can you trust? Can the Skrulls trust Nick Fury at this point?
Yeah, right. And you've flapped your gums, but I don't see your feet moving in the direction that you said you were going to go.
Look, Asgard has a new home. The Asgardians have a new home.
Yeah.
Then, you set them up lovely.
Yeah, they're happy.
Is it because of the way that they look? Like, this is all speculation on my part, right?
Fair enough. That's what this podcast is about. Like, bring that on. Bring it on.
But
we'll write it when we at the end on the backside of it. We'll figure out where we were.
Yeah, we're correct where we went wrong. But let's talk about it. As the Asgardians have a new home, what about us, bro?
Yeah, for sure.
What about us? There was a snap, like people disappeared, and then people came back, but we're still here.
Well, even what about us, bro? The snapped people are even having problems coming back, though, too, right?
Right. Yes. So, as we saw in what was it? Captain America, Falcon and Winter Soldier?
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's so much content. We should start to shift here our conversation and start to look at the Marvels a little bit before we get into the Guardians talk. Because it's all kind of connected. These three storylines are...
It seems like it. It seems
there.
Like.
There's connectivity with them, for sure. Just quickly, though, before we switch over to Marvels a little bit, what do we got to pay attention to in Secret Invasion? We got Flurkins, we got Skrulls. Do we have Flurkins in this, or was that the Marvels? That was the Marvels trailer.
No.
It's getting all mixed up in my head, too. So we got basically just Skrulls and Fury is what's going down in Secret Invasion.
Yeah, we'll see who else. I think War Machine, Colonel Rhodes, is in it as well. I'm assuming Maria Hill is in it as well. So we'll see a lot of S.H.I.E.L.D., whatever else they've become since everything went down.
Right. Well, I'd be happy to see Don Cheadle back in action. He's one of my as an actor in general. I really like Don Cheadle a lot.
I do as well. This is, again, but this is storytelling that's really going to, I believe, going to be grounded in what they do in the scope of it. The scope of it is not, cosmic.
Right.
It's going to feel personal. It's going to feel personal.
Very. So we're starting Secret Invasion is going to hit the airwaves on the 21st. Looks like we've got six episodes with an initial drop of one. And it's going to be on, looks like it's coming out Wednesdays. I'm not sure about the time yet, but the first date on the 21st should be a Wednesday. And it's only 6 episodes. You and I have talked about what we might do for coverage for Secret Invasion. We haven't confirmed yet. I know I'm going to be traveling a little bit at that time. So we're definitely going to be talking about it one way or another. And whether we're doing episode by episode or some more combined recaps, we'll see. We'll definitely talk about it before, or definitely after, if not before or during. So stay tuned. It's we've got to work out life schedules and stuff like that. So let's talk about the Marvels. And we just got that trailer dropped the other day. And that is roping in multiple storylines as well. So who is going to be in that movie? What MCU characters are we looking out for there?
So we're looking at Kamala Khan.
Right.
Ms. Marvel.
And that was a TV show. She was introduced to us in a TV show last year?
Last year.
Yeah.
Right. So we met her family last year, got her story, her background. We're looking at Monica Rambeau, who has not been given a code name, a superhero name yet in the MCU.
Okay.
So she may go by Photon, because Captain Marvel's already taken. She was the original Captain Marvel. She was Captain Marvel before Carol Danvers. So she won't
be
that.
Where have we met Monica Rambeau on screen prior?
In Scarlet Witch.
Okay. She was at the end. She showed up at the end of that.
She was in most of the episodes.
Was she? God, it's so long ago. It's like I'm trying to dredge memory she banks. It's rough out here.
she was in a lot of the episodes. She was a part of and she got her powers in that TV show.
Okay. So we've got Marvel, Rambeau, and Kamala Khan. Those are our three principals.
Captain Marvel, Ms. Marvel, and we have Monica Rambeau.
Right. Okay. Ms. Marvel. Right. Yeah. Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel. Right. So, and we got a Flerken.
Flerken. It looks like we have more than one, actually. It looks like we have more than one. And I don't know what that means because, you know, that could be a very dangerous thing. We have more than one surrounded.
And in case you forgot, that's how Nick Fury got the scars and lost the sight of his eye was from a Flerken.
That's exactly right.
And the Flerken swallowed up the Tesseract, right? Or what was
that? That's exactly right.
It had the Tesseract for a while inside of it.
It did. And that goes to show you what kind of creatures you're dealing with when you can take a Tesseract, which holds one of the Infinity Stones inside.
Right, exactly. Now, who do we think is our chief antagonists in the Miss Marvel movie?
We see some Accusers.
Okay.
We see some Kree.
Okay.
I saw a big hammer.
Are we gonna get him back? What's his name? Or is he gone now? Is it the timeline's moved on?
It's not gonna be the timeline moved on. It's not Ronan. Not Ronan. They haven't named who this accuser. At least I haven't seen the name of this accuser. Accusers. Because it doesn't have to be one person as the accuser. So we shall see what they do. I'm really baffled as to who the big bad could be.
Okay.
If it's the Kree who are trying to make a resurgent, you know, comeback in the universe, then that leads me to ties with Secret Invasion, right? Obviously. Kree, right. Skrulls, blah, blah, blah. So I can see those ties. But Marvel always does something, right? There's always an obvious, but there's also something, you know, a thread here and there about something else. So I'm kind of excited to see if there is that thread leading to something else. Because we've gotten so much of the cosmic over the last year. These big celestial, like, godlike entities that I want to see if they bring any of that into this story as well. Because what you basically have are three people who, because of their power set, are changing time and space with each other.
Right. There was like, they were getting punched into other dimensions and other, I was like, what's going on here? Which seemed kind of fun because it brought some physical, some slapstick humor into the storyline.
Let me just get this out the way. The trailer was a ton of fun.
Yes.
The trailer was a ton of fun. I laughed. I got excited watching it. I smiled like, oh, okay, yeah, this could be something. This could be something. So the trailer for the movie itself was loads of fun, the teaser.
Here's the log line. I just quickly looked up IMDb. Carol Danvers gets her powers entangled with those of Kamala Khan and Monica Rambeau, forcing them to work together to save the universe. And the poster has the three of them sort of in line with each other, almost like chakras, these sort of colorations of different things. So they're really folding these three superpowers together, literally.
Right, right. So that's my, you know, what is the major threat here? Because I just can't believe it's only the accusers. That just doesn't jive with me, because we've seen Carol by herself handle a Kree Armada.
Right. what do they got that can resist her?
Yeah, that makes them feel like, yeah, now's the time we could do
it. Or does she, or what, or how is she, what stumbles or what issues she might have that are going to weaken her or put her in a
compromising position?
Yeah, that's the phrase.
So that's my question. My big question is, because again, I just don't see the Kree as this sort of universal threat for Captain Marvel, and let alone Captain Marvel plus Monica Rambeau, whose power set is equally as ridiculous. So that's the interest that I have in this movie.
So,
Again, it looks like a load. It looks like a load of fun.
It does. The trailer had a lot of good vibes to it. I mean, you know, they build these trailers to give us, you know,
to give you that. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. But it looked fun.
It worked.
The characters are compelling. The slapstick seemed great. The stakes seemed high. So, like, all the things that I want for that style of movie. We got a long wait, though. It's not coming out until November.
November.
Yeah, November 10th is what I'm showing in my database here. So,
and it's really in line with the stuff that we've talked about previously.
Uh-huh.
You know, changing of the guard.
Yeah.
You know, a new generation of hero.
Right.
And even when we look at Carol, we look at Monica, and we look at Kamala, you know, Kamala is very much still making her way into the world.
Uh-huh.
She's still living at home.
Yeah, right. Like, know, she's a Spider-Man like character.
Yeah, with her parents, and, you know, her brother and wife are still, you know, very much involved in her life, which is a beautiful thing to watch and to see. And it's a great way to juxtapose these characters, right? Because Monica lost her family, you know, her biological family.
Right.
We've never really met Carol's. Don't even know she has any left. I don't believe so.
Right. Right. Right?
And you have this, you know, teenager, you know, who has posters of Miss Marvel, of Captain Marvel on her wall, you know, in her bedroom, in her parents' home in, you know, Jersey City. So it's really, I think it's a great way to tell a story about superheroes who are at different places in their lives, different places in their power sets.
Well, and let's talk about it too here. We've got three women. I don't see any men on the poster here.
Oh yeah, that's
right. And we've got a young woman and two adult women. We have a black woman. We have a brown woman who's a Muslim.
Who's Muslim? Danny. Right.
And then we have Bree, who's our sort of down standard the middle, white, you know, woman. White woman,
white American
and
woman.
There are no other male heroic characters being pushed forward at us. And that they're intertwining them rather than saying, Okay, you know, it's a different construct in some ways. We'll have to get into. We'll see more later in the year, but they're intertwining their powers. Their powers are being intertwined in some way, as opposed to like a buddy thing or an oppositional head-to-head thing. So even in the construct of how these three characters are going to interrelate, it's a different model than a different model. Yeah.
I don't know if did you watch the Black Widow movie?
I did. That was on Disney Plus. I was really, and I mean, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, and we gotta switch gears here in a minute. No. It was a disappointing movie. It was so disappointing because I really wanted ScarJo to have a kick-ass movie. It was misplaced in time, in intent. It was not cool. It wasn't classy. What they did.
But to your point, all the female characters were in opposition of each other.
Yes.
In that movie.
Right.
They were family, but they were in opposition to each other.
Right.
This is totally different.
Something new. Fingers crossed. Something new. All right, John. This has been awesome. We're going to come back. We will definitely be putting out podcasts prior to the movie in November, and we will have probably had Loki and Secret Invasion and all of that stuff in between. So we will be definitely getting into it, and also probably recapping the movie as well. And we're going to bring that up when we talk about Guardians of the Galaxy, because I think we're going to do something a little different. We're going to do a recap of the movie after it comes out. So let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, let's get into the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Right back.
Uh-oh. The holidays are really coming up fast, aren't they? But to quote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, don't panic. Uncommon Goods has you covered, giving you access to thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can browse stress-free from the comfort of your own couch. And if Hitchhiker's Guide fans want to follow that book's other most important piece of advice, but find that you do not in fact know where your towel is, Uncommon Goods can help you out there too. From a wearable toga towel to a beach towel that doubles as a backgammon board, complete with oversized wooden playing pieces. Hello, my name is Alicia, and I am addicted to Uncommon Goods. I honestly can't think of another site that has something for everyone in my family, from my sports-loving dad, to my foodie mom, to my sister, the board game fan. Whatever you choose will feel special, personal, high quality. It will be something your recipients keep, something that makes them feel seen. Uncommon Goods likes to stock products from independent craftsmen or small businesses, which are often handmade or in the U.S., so you can feel good about where your money's going, especially since with every purchase you make, Uncommon Goods will give $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. And bonus, we can help you score a 15% discount. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/lorehounds. That's uncommongoods.com/lorehounds for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
And we're back. All right, Jean, before we get Alisa on the line, let's do a quick recap of what we're expecting for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. What's going on with the team? Where are they since we last saw them? What are the preceding titles that we could kind of keep in our memory about where we last saw them?
Well, we last saw the Guardians and Thor Love and Thunder. At the beginning of the movie, they leave Thor, they go on a mission, and they're presumably just out in space doing good, helping where they can help and doing the things that Guardians are supposed to do, right?
Right.
So that's where we last left them.
Didn't we get a Christmas thing with them?
We did. You're right. Look at that.
I'm not even the David. Expert. I am the avowed non-expert on MCU stuff. They're in that head, right? Didn't they buy the big head from somebody?
They bought Nowhere.
Nowhere, that's what it is, yeah.
Yeah, Nowhere, which is the head of a Celestial, which is now like this super
trading outpost sort of on the edge of the rim of the galaxy.
Of the universe, of the known universe. And people come there and do their stuff. And, you know, there's a bar there and all these cool things. People live there and things like that. So they're there. And now we're at this movie. Where are the guys? Where are the Guardians? And what have they been up to since the Christmas special?
Right.
since Kevin Bacon got which was hilarious.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get into speculation because the movie is so close by.
Right.
It's going to drop in a couple of weeks.
So,
but I will say from...
Yeah, go ahead.
What I'm going to say is from the trailers that we've seen, we know the High Evolutionary is going to play a role.
Okay.
We talked about him a little bit. We actually talked about him a lot in a previous episode. A very super intelligent bad guy who... Like his name suggests, he's the High Evolutionary. So he's trying to progress the organism on a faster evolutionary track than normal, than nature would intend. So we have that guy. And then we have Adam Warlock, who is a very, very important Marvel comic book character.
Okay.
So I'm really interested to see how it plays out in this movie. Because Adam Warlock, I'm going to give a little bit of background on him real quick.
Okay.
He was created as the perfect being, the epitome of perfection of what a human being could be.
Okay.
In the Marvel Comics. When he came into sentience, he basically born out of this cosmic egg, out of this egg, he realized that the people who had created him for nefarious purposes. He destroyed them, went out into the universe to try to find himself. He met with the High Evolutionary. This is a very truncated version of his history.
Okay.
He traveled, he met with the High Evolutionary. High Evolutionary named him Warlock. He went to Counter-Earth, which is an Earth that the High Evolutionary has. That's on the other side of our sun. And those were where he got the name of Adam. How that plays out in the movie, I don't think it's going to be the same.
Okay.
Because we already see that he was created not by some nefarious earthlings, but by a space race, right? The golden people. I forgot their names. I can't remember. Escapes me for right now. Which you saw in the first Guardians. So he was in that egg from that Guardian of Galaxies movie. He hatches from that egg.
Okay.
Yes. He's the character that's in there.
I'm trying to, movie was that? I'm trying to.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right. The first one.
Mm-hmm.
There was an egg?
Whew. Yeah, there was an egg.
Okay.
He's all golden. Right. If you remember, there were the golden. This golden race of people.
Uh-huh. In the first movie.
It was the first movie.
Okay. I believe you. I'm just trying to... I'm like, whoa, I'm racking my brain for it.
Now you're making me question, so I will come back to that. But...
All right.
Regardless, he was created by that race of beings. What he was created for and how it intersects with his comic book origin and his comic book purpose, we don't know yet. Adam Warlock in the comics was given the Soul Gem. Right?
Okay. Oh, the Soul Gem. Whoa.
Yes. And in the comic books, the various Infinity Stones, it was very different from what we got in the MCU. So the Soul Gem gave him, it's like a vampire, like it feeds on souls.
Okay.
And inside of the Soul Gem is a place called Soul World, where all the souls that it has taken live. So he became an immensely powerful figure in the MCU. He fought Thanos. When Thanos in the comic books forged the Infinity Gauntlet. So he has a very deep comic book history. But I don't know how it's going to play out in the movies, because the movies have been largely, they haven't stuck to the path of the comic books, right?
Okay.
So I'm excited. And I say that I'm excited because I'm not a Guardians of the Galaxy fan.
Okay. All right.
I'm one of those guys that has not been a fan of. I confess.
Are you a comic book fan or a?
I'm a fan of certain characters in the comic books.
Okay, but the movie adaptations haven't grabbed you as much.
No, because some of the characters have changed drastically for me.
Okay.
Drax being the number one.
Oh, interesting. All right. Yeah, well, let's not go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, let's not go down it.
All right.
So, stating that I'm not a fan of movies, I am excited to see this movie because of those two characters, High Evolutionary and Adam Warlock, because I want to see what role they would play in the future of the MCU.
Got it.
Because this is the end of the Guardians as we know it.
Right, and that was an important point that we needed to bring up, is that this is the final installment of Guardians of the Galaxy. And that's a big deal.
As we know them.
Yeah.
As we know them.
Right, the characters
doesn't
could go
mean
off
it's the end.
In different directions, but as a team and as a movie franchise, as a you know a title within the MCU.
I don't know.
All right.
I don't know.
Show me the body, know. Right? Wait until the final shot to see if we can actually say that this person's dead. And even when they're dead, it doesn't mean anything.
It might not be the same characters, but it might be the same group.
Okay.
It might have the same name.
Okay.
Because what we have to understand in comic groups change.
Okay.
X-Men, Avengers, Defenders,
okay.
Guardians. The cast of characters rotate.
Okay.
So this is the end of the Guardians as we know them, but is it the end of the Guardians of the Galaxy?
Interesting.
Will the Galaxy no longer need any Guardians after this movie? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So I am hopeful that this cast of characters kind of goes away and we usher in, just like we've been talking about since we've started this podcast, a change of the...
Okay. We'll just have to wait and see till we get there. And then that's a good note to mention that our plan, Lorehound's plan, is we're going to do a little Lorehound's Assemble, and we're going to pull John, my main Lorehound man. Guardians of the Galaxy is one of his favorite parts of the MCU. And so he wants to get in on some of the action. So after the movie comes out, we're going to do a reaction podcast to the movie. We'll do some, you know, non-spoiler, you know, general takes, and then we're going to get into it all together. He is, of all the MCU things, Guardians is one of his favorites. And so he's ready to roll on that. So once the movie's out, we are definitely going to have a whole podcast just dedicated to that. All right, let's welcome Alicia from Amsterdam, friend of the Lorehounds. Alicia, how are you? It's good to finally get on the microphone with you. You've been dropping the bombs on Andor. I don't want to be negative and say bombs, but you've been really illuminating some of the deeper lore for us. So thank you for all of that. I know folks have been really enjoying your perspectives and the knowledge that you've been dropping on us. So great to have you on here.
Oh, thanks. It's good to be live with you. And yeah, I love Star Wars, but guess what? I love Marvel too. So
what pop culture don't you love? You seem to be all over it.
Well, fair enough. But I do have like three main fandoms, which are Star Wars, Marvel, and Wheel of Time. And these are ones that like go way back. So.
Oh, Wheel of Time. We are. Yeah. When John and I were ready for Wheel of Time. season two. After Rings of Power. We were so expecting it to come right along, but it it's been silent. Have you heard anything? Have you heard any whispers or tremors?
I mean, what I know is that the cast is gathering now. They're going to start filming season three any day now. And
wow.
Yeah. And there's been a little more leaks and dribbles from the marketing department, you know, official casting announcements here or there, things like that, that lead me to believe that they might be ramping up to actually give us a date and start promoting. Maybe.
Okay.
Fingers crossed.
Do you think, I don't want to get too far down this track because we're going to, fingers crossed for sure. But it feels like they almost want to be in production on three so that before they release two, so that they've got their next two properties sort of lined up.
Yeah, I think they don't want to. I mean, you see it all over the industry right now, this two-year gap in between these projects. And a lot of that has to do with like this VFX backlog. And I think that's also probably affected this. So, you know, I say I'd rather them get it right and, you know, release it when it's ready.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll be talking with you when Wheel of Time comes up, because John is a huge book reader fan. Yeah. It's one of his absolute favorites. So exciting for that. So, but we're here for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Jean and I have been talking a little bit about where the team is, that this is our last film. What's your sense of what's going on with this franchise? Jean was theorizing to me that this may not be the end as we know it. It's some kind of end, but like, could we see different permutations or people spinning off? What's your take on the coming to the close of Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and what it means for the future?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Sean 100%. This is a close for James Gunn. Obviously, he's moving over to the DC side, but I think actually relatively few of these characters will die, like, you know, maybe just a couple. And
we're going to get into that in a minute. You've got a whole thing for us, so I'm excited to get into that. But yeah, keep going.
But I think the rest are going to maybe drift off to the edges of the universe to be called back later, or maybe, you know, just join other teams, like become an Avenger or, you know, many of the Avengers permutations.
Right. Jean, thoughts on Alicia's take there?
I agree. I just don't think this is the end of the Guardians of the Galaxy. This is the end of what we've known as the Guardians. But again, the universe will need Guardians. The galaxy will need Guardians. Yeah.
Like, I don't think we're going to see another Guardians solo movie anytime too soon, but there's been rumors about this Nova special presentation, and that would tie in to have some of the characters come back. Are you a Nova fan, Sean, from the comics?
I'm a big Richard Rider. Big Richard Rider fan. Big Nova fan. Super excited for if they can bring him in. That would be really great, because there's some really great stories that they can tell with Nova. Especially, you know, Annihilation Wave. There's just so many things that I want to see out of Nova. And he's a really great character to have. So I was bummed when...
Yeah, you know, so far we've only seen, like, the Nova Corps. Yeah.
Right. And not even in the way that we know them from the comics. So that was really that was a sore spot.
Yeah. No, I think maybe they're about to remedy it, I hope. That's the rumor anyway.
I want to segue slightly before we get into before we get into the rest of the Guardians of the Galaxy, just because Jean and I were talking about the Marvels and Secret Invasion. Just quickly, Alicia, what's your hype level on both of those titles?
I mean, I love especially Kamala Khan. I'm especially excited, you know, to see more Ms. Marvel, more of her family. Like, I love all those characters. I was super into what was going on with Monica Rambeau at the end of WandaVision, and I'm really excited to see more of that. It looks like from the trailer, like, we're going to be seeing her get a grip on her power, and it's going to be exciting to see. And just bringing the three together. I'm one who liked Captain Marvel well enough. I think it's, you know, it's a decent movie, and I'm excited to, it looks like they nailed the tone in the trailer. So my hype level's pretty high.
Cool.
Where were you guys falling on that?
I'm totally in. the Marvels. Totally in. I love all the characters. Monica Rambeau, Kamala Khan, you know, Carol Danvers. Incredible characters in storytelling and in the comic books. So, you know, to have them translate onto the screen. And I really enjoyed the Kamala Khan series last year. I thought it was really fun. I thought it was really great. A nice showcase for her character. And I'm super excited for the movie. I think it's going to be great.
And let's talk just quickly, Secret Invasion, Alicia. For me, that's my big hype level. I'm excited to see the Marvels, but I am, oh boy, you know, I really want Secret Invasion to be good.
Well, yeah, I think, I said at one point that Secret Invasion could be in tone to the MCU what Andor was to Star Wars.
It's exactly what we were saying. Totally.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I hope so. But in any case, it's just really nice to see that, you know, this franchise can have like both of these flavors, you know?
Right.
So I think I'm probably, I like the light and playful and, you know, maybe the female angle makes me especially excited for the Marvels, but I'm also, I love Secret Invasion. I love the fact that it's going to be a series. So we can have that like weekly conversation about all of the plot twists. And yeah, I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Awesome. Okay, cool. All right. Well, let's dig into some Guardians of the Galaxy. You have prepared a little bit of an outline for us, a little death draft, a death pool, if you will. Why don't you describe it for us and then talk how we're going to go through it?
Yeah, okay. So a lot of the talk about this film, you know, like we said earlier, it's James Gunn's last film. And he said in interviews, and so is the cast, that it's going to be heavier and more emotional. So everyone just keeps speculating about who's going to die. So I've been listening to all of the input, and I've come down to the definitive, obviously, top five characters that are going to die in this film. We'll see what you guys, you guys agree.
Nice.
All right. So the character that I think is fifth most likely to die in Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is Gamora. And just hear me out for a second. Gamora, so far, she's been a character that's like really been in service of the other characters. And there's good reason to believe that she might be the leader of the Guardians again by the end of this film. But she's absolutely a character who would sacrifice herself for others if given the choice. Now, that being said, I would find it a real shame if she left now, especially since we just got her back and we haven't seen her get a story about her own agency yet. So far, we've just seen who she is in relation to her father and her sister and her boyfriend. So I'm going to put her
the Bechdel test here, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put her death risk at 25%. What do you guys think?
I kind of agree with, I don't think she's going to. So the low percentage, I agree with. I don't think she's going to die because it would infuriate me if she, you know, because again, she already died. They already took her and took her off the board, right? Pre-snap. It wasn't even a snap. It was just like, okay,
right.
you're going to die because this moves the story forward, right? I don't want her to
exactly.
I don't want her demise from this movie. So I'm going to agree with you that she's at the lower end of the death possibilities.
Okay.
And she's a badass character. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I want to see more with her. I want to see her and Nebula. I want to see her and Nebula like be in a good place and have like a buddy comedy adventure together.
That would be awesome. And like you said, she's led the Guardians at different points. So why can't she lead them again? Or why can't she lead them in the MCU as it goes forward? So I think that would be a good place for this trilogy to end with the passing of the torch, where she's the leader of whatever iteration of the Guardians of the Galaxy that we get at the end of the movie.
Okay. I could see that happening. All right. Moving on to fourth. So the character that I'm putting at the fourth most likely to die, it shouldn't be too much of a surprise given the last person we talked about. It's Peter Quill. And this is why. Now, Hollywood keeps telling Chris Pratt that he could literally play any role. So he's like a very in-demand actor. The question is, does he still want to play this one? do the audiences still want him? Like, I like the character Star-Lord. I'm not sure, though, that everyone's gotten over him lashing out and ruining the Avengers' attempt to subdue Thanos in an Infinity War. And what would be a more poignant story to end the series than with the, you know, quote-unquote lead dying, especially if it's like a redemption arc for something terrible that that character did before. And if he died, of course, that would free up Gamora a little more to have her own storyline. So I put his death risk at 35%. What do you think, David? Do you have an opinion?
You know, I'm going through this, I'm like, oh, I'm very nervous about making any predictions because the kind of structure of our podcast is I'm the non-expert, and okay. I feel like, oh my god, I feel like, oh, if I make a call, I'm gonna get
in
trouble.
No, make the call.
I do agree.
Make the call.
Yeah. I do agree that taking Quill off the board makes some sense, but I don't know. I'm just going off my gut reaction here. If we took him off, that is a pretty... Like that, I could. It's not innovative in some way. Mm-hmm. Maybe if another character dies, and then Quill takes it personally, his failure of leadership. Maybe it was his plan because he's the planning guy, right? Maybe it was his plan that got somebody killed. I would find that more satisfying from a story standpoint. That Quill's got to deal with the blood on his hands, so to speak. Of another character dying. So I'm going to go for a low percentage that Quill's going to die. And just to jump back to Gamora, I'm also with you on there on a low percentage. I think that would strike a weird tone to take Gamora off the table as well. Yeah. I don't know. Jean, what do you think about Quill?
I hope he dies.
I feel like a lot of people feel that way. I don't feel that way, but I think a lot of people do.
I am not a fan of Peter Quill.
All right, say more. Bring it.
As shown in the MCU, not a fan of his at all.
Okay.
Maybe it's how do I feel about Falcon David, right?
is it Mackie or
exactly,
Falcon?
Exactly. Is it Pratt or is it Peter Quill, right? I'm done with it.
How is it? It's hard to separate, right? Unless you go back to the comic books.
Right. And I'm done with the character as portrayed in the MCU. He is one of my least favorite characters in all of Marvel cinema. TV shows, the cinema, the movies, the cartoons. Right. I just don't like him. I don't like
comics?
The way that he's... No, he's... The comics, he's different. He's a little different.
Okay.
This whole nostalgia thing that goes on with him, I never dug it. I was not a fan of it.
Right,
I'm just
his
not
whole
a fan.
Lost childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole mixtape thing. You know, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it. I just don't like his story arc. I don't think he's changed from when we first met him till now. I don't think there's been much development from him as a person.
He's a pretty two-dimensional. He doesn't have a lot of three-dimensional stuff. It's very tropey.
It's very tropey.
Can I ask you, did you...
Yes, go ahead.
Did you like the What's If episode with T'Challa as Star-Lord?
Yes.
Like, do you prefer, like, would that be better if that were the main reality?
I don't know if it would be better if it was the main reality, but his was a more compelling character to me.
Okay, fair.
And maybe it's my longing for Chadwick, you know.
Yeah, of course.
To be a part of the MCU, but I really enjoyed that portrayal. I just don't think that the MCU version of Peter Quill has grown much. You know, he's still, you know, a man child, a big
baby.
Yeah,
he's the goofy
grown man's body.
Right.
He's part celestial, right? That means something. That, you know, there are there's no reason for him to be as goofy as he is at the age that he is.
Yeah. I like a goofy man child.
Like a soft spot for the man child.
I don't want a goofy man child to save the universe.
Yeah.
That's my thing. You know what I mean? And I just don't like his character development because I don't think he's developed as a character.
I take issue with the way that that Infinity War moment was written. I'm always going to say but I feel like that's more in the writers and I can't really blame the character. It just wasn't satisfyingly set up.
Oh, yeah. Totally blame the writers. Totally blame their portrayal of the character. But again, he's not my favorite. I really hope that he goes.
Well, I logged a 35% chance. So let's see.
I would have loved it to be like a 95% chance.
all right.
Okay, so yeah, we're getting high in the Deadpool. Now, my pick for third most likely to die is the obvious one, Rocket. Now, I know all the marketing is pointing toward him being the one to go with all the attention on his tragic backstory. And James Gunn called him the secret protagonist of the whole series, saying he needed to, quote unquote, finish his story in an interview recently. And also all these people, I don't know if you guys talked about the logo theory, where people think, if people think that each logo of each Guardians film represents who's going to die. Like the first one was a Woody one for Groot. And now this one, people are arguing it looks like Rocket, but I'm thinking the marketing is pointing a little too hard this way. I don't trust it. People are questioning whether Bradley Cooper wants to keep doing the role, but it's also for him, it's a voice role. It's, it's easy, fun paycheck. So I know a lot of people have Rocket at the top of their Deadpool, but I'm thinking it's possible he might be the one who walks away, the leader, the new team. And I'm putting his death risk at 50-50.
Wow. Okay. Jean?
I can see him. I can see the 50-50. I can see it going either way. From what we know, he's going to get the story. His background is going to be told to us, his quote unquote family outside of the Guardians. We get to see his, how Rocket was born into this world, into this MCU. So that hints to me as closure, right? For him. But again, like you said, he's just he's a fun character, and the way that they set up Guardians, he's always been the brains of the outfit.
Right.
So do they take the brains away from the outfit?
Yeah. Right?
They could take the heart, but you're not going to take the heart and the brains,
of the outfit. If it's prosthetic brains, then Rocket will steal it.
That's exactly
That's
right.
That's very true.
That's exactly
that is
right.
Very true.
So I can see him. I can see the 50-50. I can see him going teetering either way. Do I want him to survive? Yes.
Yes.
Rocket, I definitely want Rocket to survive. But it is possible.
I feel like most people do want Rocket to survive. And so the studio knows that, and as long as they can get Bradley Cooper to keep doing it, why would they stop?
Right. Exactly. So that I'm with the 50-50.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't disagree. And I think, Jean, didn't you say that Rocket's origins, isn't it the opposite side planet? And isn't that going to be a story thread that they're bringing in? So
yes.
It could complicate things if we didn't have Rocket as an entry to that, those elements.
Right. So he's created by the High Evolutionary, right? So
right.
On Counter Earth, High Evolutionary is the big bad of the film. So again, let's see, or the alleged big bad of the film. Say
that. Right.
So let's see if there's some sense of full circle with his story, with Rocket's story, meeting his creator, which is, could portend some doom. when you meet your creator.
Yeah, it does. You were going to say, Alicia?
Well, no, it's actually a very interesting segue into the second place on the Deadpool, which is...
Nice, okay.
Which is the High Evolutionary. Now, yeah, predicting that the villain will die in a Marvel movie is a pretty safe bet, I think. But he's he's not on the top of the list, though, because, like, I think, you know, they have Chakwudi Iwuji in the role. And when you have an actor of that caliber, I could see James Gunn giving this character more complexity than there seems to be in the trailers. And I think, yeah, there's more stories to be told with this character if he sticks around, and Iwuji seems enthusiastic about it. So I am putting the death risk high, but I'm putting it at 80%. So there's some wiggle.
80%?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Man. We're getting to the top of the list. Yeah.
Man, that's... If he goes, that's a shame, because there's so many stories to be told with this guy.
You know,
he's interwoven in so many other groups, and he's not.
But
just,
I might be burned by recent experiences with, like, you know, like, I would have expected so much more from Gore the God Butcher, and I don't know. I feel like the good decision would be to keep him around, but they might squander him for an emotional impact, but make him more complex first.
When you put it that way, then yeah, because they have done wrong by their villains. That's absolutely, that is true.
Like, wow. Even like Killmonger is one of my favorite villains, probably in almost any movie. And even he was a one movie villain, except a cameo, obviously.
Right. Yeah. Wow. That's, man.
she shook. You got shook there, y'all. You got shook.
I was not thinking High Evolutionary, but Lisa makes sense. It actually makes sense, because, like she said, the villains don't last in
right.
the MCU.
They don't. There's only one real villain that's lasted, and that was Thanos, and that was a huge arc.
Or Loki, but then, you know, you have to have the redemption arc. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And then I think Loki's a whole different class of character.
Right, anti-hero.
Very much so. Very much so. Yeah, I don't have an opinion about the evolutionary, because I really don't know much, but I do agree that it's an easy way forward for the writers and the production to sign off on a one-time villain. Because if you've got to do multi, if you've got, I'm thinking production now, if you've got to sign a multi-episode deal or multi-movie deal with an actor, and things are a little bit funky right now in the movie and streaming world. We don't know really where they are. A quicker, easier way is to have a one-off, for sure.
But I do think, like, the way we've seen Iwuji, like, embrace the role at, you know, cons and just in the press and things like that, if he has the enthusiasm for it, I could see them making an excuse to keep him around, because, you know, that's an actor you want in your stable.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But you're right. Cool. I think there is a high percentage. That 80% is probably right on the nose that he's gone.
All right. What's
all
next?
Right. All right. So we reached the top of the list.
Here
Drum
we go.
Roll. The character most likely to die. I'm giving it to Drax. And this is purely because Dave Bautista, he announced that this would be his last Guardians film. Before they even started making the movie. And yeah, I can see Drax taking one for the team with letting out one final punchline at the saddest moment. And yeah, it would be the most Drax way to go out. And it's also, it's not a sad thing completely, because in the first movie, he said he would be reunited with his family when he died. And like, I would really love that outcome for him, which
that
I was just going to say, it even leaves an opening for Drax to cameo in the future, as the MCU seems to be getting more interested in the afterlife.
I agree that it would be a fitting end to his arc, and it would be a good way to go out. So I think I'm with you on here for all of the reasons. But in terms of just the handful of characters that we're looking at, you could set up a death quite easily. It would have punch, but it wouldn't take the whole movie franchise down with it either. So yeah, I think I have to agree with you. Jean, where are you at with Drax?
Yeah, he's my number one.
Okay.
When Yeah. Right. When Alicia, you know, said this is the segment that she wanted to do, I said, yeah.
He it's dragged.
Internally, it was like, yeah, he's my number. He's my number one.
Okay.
I think I have him at 100%.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's certainty.
Yeah. He's out of here. I think his story arc has run through. You know, there's not much more we can do with Drax post.
Right.
This new post, you know, phase 5. There's nothing else for him to do, really.
Right.
I think he's run, like Alicia said, like, he told us what he wants. You know? He wants to be reunited with his family. And I think he's going to get the opportunity to do that. So, yeah, definitely Drax is my number one on the hit list. I think he's going to go. He's going to go out in a blaze of glory. And it'll be a well-deserved death because he's been through so much.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, are there any characters I didn't mention that you expected to see on the list?
Mantis is the one that jumps up for me just because she has a join. Well, she's, you know, of all the crew members.
Right.
They certainly have brought her into the crew. She is a part of the crew now. And so I'm just doing an inventory, not necessarily prediction.
Yeah, no, I think just because of this, they're setting up this story with her as Peter's sister. For me, it's another argument why Peter could die, but I don't think it's actually going to happen.
Right.
But I think they're just sort of, like they said in the behind the scenes about the Christmas special, that they were just starting to chip away beneath the surface of that character and let the actress show what she can do.
Right. I am just doing inventory as well, and we can talk about all these, but we certainly Groot and Nebula, right? Those are the other two that I would think of just in terms of the whole Guardians team, our core team.
Well, in the trailer, there's a scene of where we see Groot with just like a head and these little branch things sticking out, almost like a spider. And that, to me, that shows like Groot can literally lose his head and be okay. And I think we already did the Groot death in one.
We did. It's true. And trying to serve up the teenager's death, or, you know, sort of hit that emotional button. I don't know that it would have a lot of energy for us on that. We'd be kind of like, it doesn't seem like it would hit quite right. I don't know. Jean, thoughts?
Yeah, I thought Kraglin would make him less as well.
No. But he's just like, I feel like we just also had the, you know, we just had the same death in Guardians 2, you know, and there would be too much of a repeat of that. He's just learning how to use the whistle thing.
Oh, is he he's the Yondu character, the Reavers or whatever.
Right. Sort of protege, I guess.
Right. What was their collective called? I forget now.
The Ravengers.
Well, Ravengers, that's it, not Reavers. Reavers is Game of Thrones. Sorry, I'm mixing my IP all over the place here. My brain is a messy place.
Yeah, and thinking about the movie, you know, I'm going to put Peter Quill higher.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to put him higher.
But is that wishful thinking?
Not my wishful thinking, because of the Adam Warlock character. I think in the comics, Adam does lead a version of the Guardians. So we already have two people we know can be quote unquote the lead of the Guardians, in Gamora or Adam. So I'm thinking that he's gonna go.
Okay.
I think he's going to go because they're setting up the new wave, the new leadership, the new direction for the Guardian. So I'm going to put him at maybe 2.
So who do you think, how would you rank most likely to lead coming out of this between Gamora, Rocket, and Adam Warlock? Yeah. Between Gamora, Rocket, and Adam Warlock, who would you say is most likely to lead?
I'm gonna put Gamora 1, Adam Warlock 2, Rocket 3.
Okay.
And Marvel the MCU is going to a very, you know, celestial cosmic place, and Adam Warlock is a cosmic character in that way, right, from the comic books. So if they do anything, if they do anything to bring that sort of storytelling to this character in the movie, then I can see that sort of power set that he has being placed at a higher premium than what we've had with Star-Lord.
Okay. So yeah, I'm putting Rocket at number one in leadership most likeliness, but that's purely based on the interview with James Gunn where he was saying that he's been like the secret leader all along, which makes me think maybe he's about to like realize his, that actually he's less of a misanthrope than he thinks.
Well, maybe the death of some character is going to affect him and temper him and, you know, that sort of crucible effect and bring something forward that we haven't seen yet in Rocket. Because Rocket's always been very, what's the word I want to look for? He challenges you in a lot of different ways, in authority, in ideas, in expectations. He's also got a kind of an irreverent nature to him as well, always sort of throwing sand in your face. I'm not sure how I'm trying to describe him, but he's always pushing against boundaries and conventions. That's a very young person kind of attitude, right? You're bucking and you're changing and you're trying to force your way into the world. And then stuff happens to you and it tempers you and it brings you, it brings some maturity or some wisdom or a different perspective on things. So maybe the death will be a key turn for Rocket.
But I guess the question then is also, have the modifications to Rocket also extended his lifespan?
Right.
Right.
I was just going to wonder in terms of, market palatability, market, can I say that three times fast? In the sense of all of this IP story driven stuff, like we want good stories, we're invested in these characters, all this kind of stuff. At the end of the day, it's a business and it's what can be marketed and what will the market accept. And we know sometimes the market doesn't accept stuff. Mm-hmm. Could we see a franchise led by a raccoon? Would that be of a character that the market would actually get behind and be interested in seeing their story and their leadership and their moving whatever future composition of a Guardians would look like? It's just an open question.
Yeah. What if they did like an animated show for it?
That could work.
That could work. That could work.
I have a question for you guys. What if if one or two or three of these characters spun off into their own story, film or TV, who would you choose and what would the story be?
Huh?
Jean, go. Or do you need a minute?
Give me a minute.
I'll throw something. I think you had said something about Gamora and Nebula earlier.
That was going to be mine. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I could see that. Nebula is an interesting character. There's a lot of anger and pain there, and her struggle with her own acceptance, but also being a very powerful and capable person in the world. That could be some interesting storyline to follow up. I don't know that I'd be so much interested in a Groot show, maybe a Saturday morning kids cartoon or something like that.
Well, they did that. Yeah.
So I think for me, Nebula is interesting. And I don't know what's going to happen if Drax is the one to go. What happens with Mantis, right? Because aren't they in a relationship?
Well, not a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not?
No.
Okay.
He keeps calling her ugly.
Anyway, yeah, I'd be down for a Gamora Nebula kind of thing.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. The Gamora and Nebula, I agree with. Rocket and Groot as a duo.
Okay.
I can see something like that happen. Even in a movie, I can see something like that happen.
What would be like the format? Like Bounty Hunters or something else?
Yes. Yeah. Like running nowhere.
Okay, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
something revolving around, you know, the bar or something like that. I can see a story around that. And then Adam Warlock.
Yeah.
those are the three characters. I think Adam Warlock is going to be a major player in the MCU.
I'm here for it.
Yeah. So you've got a note here, Alicia, about maybe putting some kind of points-based thing so we can record our predictions. I'm not sure what you had in mind, but my thought would be is if you or us or however we do it, we maybe throw together some sort of Google sheet or something like that, and we can put a link on the MCU channel in our Discord. And okay. So that way the three of us could lock in our points. And then when we come back yep. for the follow-up podcast, we can... So I think what we're going to do for the follow-up podcast is John wants to get in on some of the action. So we may do a general thing and then bring you in for the death pool points adjudication there.
Okay.
How does that sound for everybody?
Works for me.
That sounds great.
Okay. So yeah, we've got an MCU Universe channel in our Discord, link in the show notes, if you want to check that out. And then, yeah, we'll have you, Alicia, back for the recap of that. Anything else that you guys want to throw in before we bring this round to a close?
No, I just want to thank Alicia for this idea. I thought it was really cool. And again, yeah, let's go, Peter.
Yeah, I was glad to get in live with you guys this time. This was a lot of fun, and you've got me rooting for Peter Quill's death. What can I say?
that's what nice. We aim to do. That's what we aim to do.
Alicia, before we cut you loose, I wanted to mention something. This is something else that we don't have yet in place, but we're working on. I want to call you, Jean, and John, and myself, and we want to do some Spider-Man, Spider-Verse something for it. Haven't worked out the details yet, but I think you're a Spider-Verse person, right, Alicia?
Yeah, we talked about this briefly, yeah.
Yeah, so... I think we've got to hammer out some details and look at the release date and look at our podcasting schedule. Maybe, you know, I don't know what we're going to do in prep, but certainly in post after the movie's out and we've all seen it, I would love to call all four of us together and have a little bit of a roundtable. I have never seen the first movie.
Yeah.
And everybody, like, I get an earful every time I say I haven't seen it. People are like, oh my God, are you kidding me? You haven't seen this movie? So I'm excited to see a round two. Jean, I know you had some feelings, though. You were like, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I got some feelings about Spider-Verse. I got some feelings about it. But
did you like the first one?
I love the first one.
Okay, yeah, because I think the first one's one of the best animated movies ever made.
The animation in the trailer for the second one looks amazing. I was just captivated seeing.
But I've heard bad things from behind the scenes. But it's just like typical. No. It's just typical Sony BS. So
okay. But yeah.
All right. So stay tuned for that. We'll have updates for that. Anything else, Alicia?
No. I look forward to talking more Star Wars, Marvel, other geekery, Wheel of Time.
Can people find you online? Where are you at? And you've got something else. You've got some other projects cooking too. So why don't you drop some info for all that?
Yeah. So you can find me on Twitter, just at Alicia CB. It's ElysiaCB, and there's where I drop all of my pan fandom thoughts about everything and some cat and food photos sometimes too. And I've also just launched a new podcast to cover the upcoming series Silo, which starts starts on Apple on May 5th. So we've already got a couple episodes out just analyzing the trailers and what we expect going in. I'm there as the book reader, and my friend is there as the newbie who knows nothing. So
okay, awesome. Very that cool. Sounds great. Give a listen to that. And you're also very active on our Discord.
Yes. So you can definitely
and by
find
the time,
me there.
Yes, totally. And by the time this releases, we will have released our season wrap-up and episode 8 coverage of The Mandalorian, and we're planning to have you pop on for some wrap-up thoughts for the season as well. So we're looking right. forward to that conversation, which will have happened because of the timescape magic of podcasting.
Right. I look forward to have done it by the time you hear this.
Great. All right, Alicia, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.
Take care. This is great.
All right, Jean, that was a great conversation with Alicia. I'm looking forward to getting our internet points locked in so that we can hold each other to account for our predictions. Any final thoughts on...
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Fingers are crossed, and so are my That's toes. Right. So this we'll take it from there.
All right, so we've got Secret Invasion is going to be next up on deck. And then it's going to be the Marvels out in November. And we still, any rumblings about Loki, I think, is that our one other property that we're waiting for a release date on?
Nothing yet. No release date is still to be announced. And so is Echo to be announced.
Okay.
So we'll, as soon as we know about those dates, we'll start doing some homework on what we think is going to happen.
And we're pretty sure Agatha and Ironheart are going to get kicked to 2024?
2024, yes.
Okay.
We don't have any new news on those shows either. So that's why okay. we're pretty sure it's going to be 24.
Right. And I believe, isn't What If going to drop the What If animated series going to drop this year as well?
That's what they say. But again, okay. we don't have an outline. We don't have a time frame.
Okay.
So they're being really cagey about when things are going to appear. So
well, we've got big changes at the Mouse anyway with exactly, the Bobs, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So it might be your overall theme of, you know, slowing down releases.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, I think that's it for us. I want to get into our outro stuff. And the first thing that when we wrap up that we always like to do is to thank our patrons. To all of our patrons, thank you so very much for being a subscriber. Not only does it make us feel good to know that we have the support of the community, but it also provides for direct material support so that we're actually able to produce these podcasts. Our lore masters who are, and our lore masters who are our top tier supporters, we always like to give them a shout out. At the time of this recording, we just had two new people sign up. And if you sign up as a lore master in between here and there, we will pick you up on the other side of this. But to Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H., Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, Nick W, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Lavinia T, Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, and newest members Eric F and Matthew M. Thank you all so very much. We cannot begin to express the extent of our gratitude. Programming notes. So this will have come out at the end of April. I have not yet done the planning for May yet, so stay tuned for we will have had more regular updates from there. What I can tell you is that we covered Mandalorian, where we will still be concurrently covering Ted Lasso season 3. We have our Book Nook series out with Marilyn R. Pakila. We're reading The Wizard of Earthsea, the whole cycle. So we just released part one and part two of A Wizard of Earthsea. So go back, check those out. We'll be reading The Tombs of Atuan for May. And then The Furthest Shore, I believe, will be out in June. And then Tehanu will be out in July. That's the theoretical schedule. But anyway, we're rolling forward on that. And we have a channel in the Discord where you can jump on and talk about that kind of stuff. We've also just released the lore. Oh, I'm sorry, Jean, you were going to say something? We just had a Lorehounds play out with Brandon the Bard, another one of our side hustle podcasts. I think they're covering The Last of Us Part 1B, I guess you could call it. They got into it so much that they had to break up the podcast into two chunks. And the Silmarillion stories, our next episode of Silmarillion stories will have come out by then, of Thingol and Melian. And we had our special guest, Mary Clay from That's What I'm Talking About, join us there. So thank you, everyone. Again, Jean, as always, it's been a pleasure. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, thank you for having this conversation. And yeah, let's hope for some really good and exciting shows and movies upcoming.
All right. So we'll see y'all on the other side of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Take care.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.